Are you a marketing or advertising professional looking to stay ahead of the game? Well, we've got the perfect opportunity for you. Advertising Week New York is back for its 19th edition, and it's bigger and better than ever. Picture this: 4 jam-packed days of inspiring keynotes, thought-provoking panels, and networking with the industry's brightest minds. Advertising Week New York is where the world's top brands, agencies, and leaders come together to shape the future of marketing and advertising. But wait, here's the best part. You can secure your spot at Advertising Week New York during the exclusive Early Bird Summer Sale. Act fast and save 30% on all pass types. That's right, you'll have access to every session, every workshop, and every unforgettable moment. Don't miss this chance to gain insights from the industry's trailblazers, connect with potential clients, and elevate your career. But remember, this sale ends on August 1st. Head over to advertisingweek.com/New York today and buy your pass. No promo code needed. The 30% discount applies automatically. Advertising Week New York, the ultimate gathering for marketing and advertising professionals. Be part of the conversation, be part of the innovation, and be part of the future. Get your early bird sale pass now and join us at Advertising Week New York. Theater of branding and marketing, artists play an essential role as narrators, breathing life into brands through their palette of creativity and transforming ordinary campaigns into compelling visual symphonies that sing directly to the hearts of consumers. David Stanley Hewitt is one of the most well-known foreign artists in Japan. This exciting session from Advertising Week Asia promises a peek behind the curtain into David's distinctive approach to brand storytelling. We hope you enjoy it.
My name is Robert Held. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Custom Media. We are an award-winning digital creative agency in Tokyo with a mission to help foreign brands to succeed in the complex Japanese market by bringing their stories to life. We all share an inherent affinity for stories. When we think back to our earliest memories as children, stories helped us to learn about the world. As adults, stories still guide us. They help us figure out what we believe in and how to handle life's ups and downs. In today's fast-paced and complex society, stories serve as a grounding force, as an anchor that helps us make sense of the world around us. They don't merely carry information, but act as a means of connection and communication that taps into our shared human experiences, evoking emotions, generating empathy, and ultimately driving action. Think of the brands that you love and feel a strong connection with. Why do you choose them over countless many others? It is because they tell a story that relates to you, a story that aligns with your identity, your aspirations, and your worldview. These narratives lend a human touch to the brands we love and admire, allowing us to not just know what they sell, but who they really are, and what they stand for, and why they exist. Stories are what make us human. We are informed by them, motivated by them, and united by them. Today, I'm delighted to share the stage with David Stanley Hewitt, one of the most well-known foreign artists in Japan. For over 3 decades, David has shared his passion for Japanese art and culture with the world through his signature work. And along the way, David has helped global brands to connect with their consumers through the power of storytelling through his unique art. David, welcome.
Thanks, everyone. Good morning.
David, I'm looking forward to our conversation, and I'm truly excited to delve into your work and your artistic thought process. Perhaps you can start by giving our audience a brief introduction for yourself and your foray into the work of Japanese gold leaf art.
Where to start? This could take an hour, it could take 10 minutes. So I've been in Japan for 30 years. I come from a family of artists. My mom is an artist. She's a printmaker, woodblock printmaker. My oldest brother is a sculptor and an architect, and my middle brother is a jazz singer. So we come from a very arty family. I got interested in ceramics in the United States when I was very young, 4 years old actually. Started doing ceramics in the States and then got interested in Japanese ceramics in my teens. I also started doing Japanese karate in my teens in the States. So all of that led me to invariably end up in Japan. I've been in Japan for 30 years. I've apprenticed to a Japanese potter when I was younger. I went to university at Hokkaido University up north in Sapporo. And I've apprenticed to a Japanese screen maker as well. My art is largely using gold leaf on the painting side. And I spent years working on Japanese screens, making Japanese screens, and then about 2005, 2006, I brought that know-how over to what you're seeing right there, to wood and canvas, and making more abstract art in Japan.
Very, very interesting. So what sparked your interest in combining your unique art with brand storytelling? Can you share the journey that led you to collaborating with brands?
Yeah, I can't take credit for that, actually. The first collaboration that happened without my knowledge, believe it or not. I was doing an exhibition at Takashimaya in, for those of you from overseas, Takashimaya is a big department store here, and the nicer galleries in Japan tend to be in department stores. I was doing an exhibition in 2011 at Takashimaya, and the gallery manager there put one of my paintings into a competition in Kyoto for obi design. And obi is the women's belt that goes around the kimono. And I won the competition. I didn't even know I was in it until they told me I won it. And so we ended up making an obi, or the sash, for Takashimaya to be sold nationally in Japan. And that was my first collaboration, and I can't take any credit for it whatsoever.
Very interesting. So you got into branding.
But it went really well, and we ended up the next summer making, and this I knew about, they asked me to design Japanese summer robes called yukata. And we designed those and sold them nationally as well. So that was my first collaboration.
Very interesting. So your very first collaboration was with a very prominent Japanese brand.
Yeah.
And you didn't even know it was coming, and it
That's
happened.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
Interesting. So when you start working with a brand, for example, the Decanta Whiskey Project, what's your process of understanding their story and their identity?
Yeah, I think that's key to getting it right, I think, is a lot of these brands that I work with, like Puma, what you're seeing now, this is Riedel and Decanta. Decanta is an online reseller of whiskey. They're probably, I think they're the largest in the world. And they approached me 2 years ago and said, we're launching some very expensive whiskey. Every year we do a special offering of whiskey, and we want you to design something that will highlight the whiskey, be cognizant of how long it takes to make great whiskey and age it in sherry casks, and that there's a real story there. And so I came up with doing something in lacquer. And in Japan, Wajima Nuri, or Wajima Lacquer, is probably the most famous and old. And so I went up to Wajima to a friend's studio. They're relatively young in the business. They've only been doing it 214 years.
Wow.
There are a lot more older studios up there, but this is called the Taya, T-A-Y-A, the Taya Kobo, okay, or studio. So I designed a box made of Wajima lacquer for Decanta. I designed the bottles and had them made by Sakai Glass in Osaka, all with shoulders of samurai. So Maybe I should jump back in. The painting series that I'm most well known for is called Bushido. And Bushido is the code of ethics of the samurai.
Yep.
Some are familiar with that, some may not be. But I spent 4 years in the United States Marine Corps and studied ancient Japanese history. And so I was very interested in martial history and ethics and these things. And so I really got into Bushido and started this series of paintings called Bushido based on that and based on historical happenings. So that is the prerequisite for this box there. This is based on Bushido designs, and you can see the glasses come up with strong shoulders like warriors. The lids are all made of Wajima lacquer. And we launched this a little over 8 weeks ago in New York to a global audience. There's boxes with Karuizawa whiskey in them.
Wow, very interesting. Yeah. So how does your artistic work impact the success of the brand? Maybe you can explain how it's been helping them with their launch and their marketing.
Yeah, with Decanta, I think most of their business is Japanese whiskey. And so they wanted to do something Japanese, but also appealing to an international audience. They wanted it deeply founded in history and the arts and culture of Japan, but also modern and appealing.
Yep.
They also wanted something that respected how long it takes to make great whiskey. You know, some of the Karuizawa whiskey they're selling is 60 years old, and it's been, you know, so, and lacquer is something that lasts forever. It takes, you know, the lacquer that we made took over a year, many, many layers of lacquer. So they wanted something that, aligned with the process of making whiskey in terms of how long it takes and how hard it is to make a good whiskey and how hard it is to make good lacquer. And then bringing that sort of Japan flavor to an international audience. It's sort of spiced up the offering that they were doing rather than just putting it in sort of normal whiskey bottles and hoping people understood how good the product was.
So I guess as a consumer, a love for whiskey, you know whiskey takes a long time to make, and so your art also takes a really long time to come to be.
That's right.
And so this connection with that, you know, longevity and what you do with the art is also kind of what makes it unique for the brand to succeed,
I suppose.
Right. Yeah.
And just the care taken to make something really well. They wanted to align with both me and the Taya studio to do something that, really people put a lot of thought into and really care about.
Yeah, I can imagine. So there's always this challenge, right? So when you when you're collaborating with brands, you know, how do you make sure that you know, what you're trying to do isn't just about selling a product, because often brands that get it wrong end up, you know, not really capitalizing on it. So what do you do to, you know, make sure that it's not just about selling the product, but also a way to connect with their consumers on a really deeper level?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you mentioned whiskey takes time, right?
Yeah.
So how does
that
work for
you? That is so important to this process.
Yeah.
If you're focused only on selling, at some point you're going to run out of steam. If if that is your only goal, your goal has to be something else, and the selling is the secondary or the benefit of having done something very well. You can do it for a year or two, or maybe even five. You can sell something that's a great product, but unless you you're really passionate about the quality or the history or the sort of the art of the project, I think both your customers, your staff in your company are going to grow tired of it. And so having these collaborations is a way to excite your consumer base. It's a way to excite your employees. And it's a way to, in Japan, and for me, it's a way to bring the global spotlight to creativity in Japan and the great craftsmen we have here.
So I guess then your process of selecting brands, you take a lot of time to really understand what their goal is, you know, what they're trying to achieve. If it's just about, you know, okay, we need to make a quick buck selling, selling tons of these or whatever, then it doesn't really resonate with you.
Right? And that's also a great point, because I'm 56 now, and until I was about 45 or so, I said yes to everything, because I'm an artist who needed work. But in the past 10 years or so, I'm very selective about these projects. And if I feel the brand, the company that is asking me to do something is passionate about it and really understands the care that will go into making these bespoke products for them, then I'm full on and want to do it with them. But if it's just about, you know, sort of a different way to sell the same thing, less interested.
Sure.
Yeah.
I just saw that Puma shoe pop up, right? Is that just one piece? Or how many pieces did you make?
So I made a few of those, but this was a one-off.
Okay.
We may end up doing something together. That's an ongoing conversation. But they had Tokyo Fashion Week last autumn, I believe. And they wanted a shoe for that that was going with this sort of modern, not kimono-esque, but modern men's Japanese clothes. And so I made that shoe for the Puma Fashion Week show, which happened in Tokyo. Yeah.
Okay, wow, that's super cool. So how do you continue to stay innovative and fresh creatively, you know, while kind of maintaining a brand's consistency? I think that Puma is a really good, interesting example because, you know, gold leaf on a shoe, I would have never thought of it.
Yeah, me neither.
So
it works quite well, actually.
It does. Yeah. It looks great. You know, that's why I was wondering how many pairs did you make, because I wouldn't mind buying one.
Just a few. Staying fresh is an important thing, especially if you do something for a long time. For me, actually, it's kind of thinking about it the other direction, is by doing these collaborations, I stay fresh. Because I get to see the world artistically through different sets of eyes.
Sure.
And when you work with these large companies like Riedel or Puma or Takashimaya or Decanta, or they have whole teams of design folks that you get into to meetings with. And they bring completely different ways of seeing my art and different ways of seeing their products than I thought of. I learned a lot about the Puma shoe company that I didn't know before. And these shoes we made are actually all made in Japan.
Okay.
The whole shoe, everything, the laces, everything's made in Japan. So that was kind of a cool project. But in terms of staying fresh and being able to bring new ways of thinking to your art, it's through these collaborations, because I get to see through different people's eyes.
Very interesting. How long did it take to make that shoe?
A long time. I actually, you know, at 56, my eyesight's not great, and I had to buy my first, what do we say in English? I forget my English, lupe in Japanese, but the big magnifying glass with a light in it.
Oh, yes, yes.
And I had to look through like that, because it's very detailed work, yeah.
So, you know, as an artist, do you have creative blocks, right? And what happens when you come across a creative block, and what do you do to kind of get out of it? Because, you know, it's one of the challenges that we face in our industry, right?
Yeah.
As writers, as designers, and whatnot, as creative people.
The first thing I do is get very frustrated. and I brood a bit. And as soon as my wife notices that, she drags me out of the studio and we go visit a Shinto shrine, or we go to a museum, or we do something completely not connected with art. And invariably, I will take a picture with my iPhone of a stone or an old Japanese building or a hinge at a shrine that's made of brass but kind of looks like gold to me. Something like that, and it will unlock something. And then I go back to the studio and play with that idea for a little while. But I have to be thankful to my wife about that, because if she wasn't around, I would stay in the studio and brood, probably.
So you used to practice martial arts, right, if I'm right? So do you still practice it? Does that help you in your creative blocks when you know, because you said your frustration, it's good to take it out with martial arts. Right?
That's interesting. I actually, that's a very good point. I don't practice karate anymore, but I do have a gym in my studio precisely for that. Yeah, sometimes if you're too in your head, it's not good. And a lot of my art is very physical. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of large work. I paint ceilings of shrines, and do very. I just finished a giant commission for the Ritz-Carlton in Kyoto, which was enormous, and you know, it's 1,500 sheets of gold and takes a lot of physical effort.
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah, and you also get a little tired, so I'll break it up and go to the gym for just 20 minutes and then mm-hmm. come back. And just mm-hmm. So that's very important, yeah.
Yeah, no, I visited your studio in Carrizo, amazing studio, and you also have a nice place, you know, you're behind the studio, I noticed, to do the work, and some of the work, your process that I saw, you know, you put the canvas on the floor and then drop the paint.
At the end,
Then, okay, that was amazing.
Yeah.
Just to see you do that.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. What are the biggest challenges you face when interpreting a brand's identity through your art, through your artistic lens?
I think spending time getting out of your head, mm-hmm. Losing your ego, and being able to see the brand through the brand's eyes is super important at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then the reason they're engaging with me is they want a different view of their own products, whatever it is. Mm. And so that's the next level. But the first thing is for me is to, like with Puma, is to go back and read the history of the father's shoe company and the two brothers that had a fight and created Adidas and Puma and, like, you know, and all the drama around that and, you know, and what a great job they've done and how much Japanese love Puma and, like, you know, trying to figure out that whole story. Mm-hmm. And then I went to the manufacturing side and what materials do they use and why is made in Japan important for them? Mm. So the shoe we did is called the Clyde, which if you're a Puma fanatic, you'll know. I didn't know about it at the beginning, but people love these shoes and mm-hmm. collect them mm-hmm. around the world. And they made a Clyde shoe, all made in Japan.
Yeah.
And that's the one they chose, obviously, for me to work on.
Yeah.
Understanding where the companies come from, the history of the company, if it's lucky enough to have been around for so long.
Yeah.
And really understanding where they're coming from is step one. And then step two is try to push them a little bit to see things could be like this. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, history and culture, you know, tradition is very big in Japan, right? And, you know, you mentioned very modestly the 214-year-old whiskey company, right? So it's really understanding the tradition, understanding the history, and then kind of bringing it into your vision, I imagine must be a really exciting process.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you get feedback, right, from the brands who end of the day, it's their brand, it's their story. You might get pushback. So how do you interpret their feedback and into your creative process? Is there do you have challenges kind of, you know, navigating that with brands?
I wouldn't say it's a challenge. I say I love the feedback because that's the part that's fun about collaboration.
Sure.
If there was no feedback or pushback, then there wouldn't be a collaboration because it's sort of a 50-50 thing.
Yeah.
So, the one thing I'll say is if they come back and say, we prefer that you paint the shoe pink with roses, then that's not me.
Okay.
Right? So, but if they come back and say, you know, we like the design, but the gold leaf is going to, we think, will chip off or something. Can we redo that? Mm-hmm. Or we'd like, you know, it to be a little more bold with the Puma logo or something like that, then yeah, absolutely. So feedback is key and welcome.
Yeah, that's good. Good that you appreciate that process, right? Because
Absolutely. Sometimes
artists can get very defensive, and you know, it's my piece of art at the end of the day, and you know, they wouldn't be willing to collaborate. And you put it very nicely, collaboration is what makes the piece at the end of the day.
It's what makes it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, in your past experiences and your cultural influences, what has shaped your approach of storytelling in your work? Like, how does it help you to think about not just, you know, creating art, but storytelling, right? Because
so
it's all about that.
In my work alone, not in the collaborating side, I did a degree in ancient Japanese history and I still read a lot. I tend to paint one of these Bushido paintings after thinking about an historical event in Japan. Something that happened in history and how those people were feeling at the time so the paintings, I don't know if we're scrolling one of the Bushido series paintings, but they tend to, there's the piano, you'll see the piano come across this, we call it sha in Japanese, mm-hmm. but the throne paint.
That's the piano, yeah.
So this is 24 karat gold leaf from Kanazawa. Mm-hmm. I paint on acrylic mostly. Mm-hmm. Having come from the Marines, I was interested in discipline. But when I discovered samurai, I was so surprised by how elegant, especially in the Edo period, how elegant the samurai were doing tea ceremony and calligraphy and wearing beautiful kimonos. And Marines were definitely tough, but maybe not that refined. And so I wanted to show that elegance with the gold. The red is sort of the passion of battle. And then the black, the throne, paint or ink in some cases is, in Japanese we say ishin, which means instant, the instant that one's character is revealed. So as a Marine or a samurai, you would train every day, years and years and years, for a single second. When your character gets sort of revealed, and that's where that came from.
That's the action, the motion.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at the shrine. How many pieces are there in that, and how do you
so
work
that was
that?
That was a big one. Talking about feedback, you can imagine a foreign artist gets commissioned to paint the ceiling of a 600-year-old shrine. There's a little feedback that goes with that process. And very abstract. So yeah, some people, most people love it, some not so much, but that, you know, the chief priest there wanted to make a whole new feel for this very ancient shrine in Nagano, which is one that we go to. We've done all our ceremonies in Japan, family ceremonies there. Yeah, so that was 24 square meters. It took a long time. It's about 2,600 sheets of Kanazawa gold.
Wow.
On 24 1-meter square panels. So we made those, I made those in my studio. And then the reason there are three thrown lines there of ink is because the history of the shrine, there was a prince who got lost in the woods of Nagano, and a three-legged blackbird or a crow, karasu in Japanese, helped him out of the woods, led him to safety. And so that's sort of the mascot of the shrine. And that's the founding story of the shrine. So they built the shrine there.
Oh, beautiful. I was wondering what those three legs are. Or
yeah,
those
three little
backs.
That's why three.
I was going to ask you about that. Because, yeah, that just brings the story to life for the shrine and the shrine goers, right?
Yeah.
So when you enter the shrine, and I wonder, when you enter the shrine, do your eyes automatically go up to the ceiling, or they just go in front of you?
There's 2,500 sheets of pure gold reflecting light back at you, so you can't avoid it. When you walk in, you go like this. Most shrines will have, well, it depends what part of the country you're in, but most shrines will have what we call stan in Japanese, the black sort of border wood there, and inside you'll have some paintings. Often they're historical depictions. They may be like stories, like a Catholic church, you know, telling the history of the local area. They may be deities, they may be any number of things, but they tend to be rather subdued in color. Mine is not that.
Wow, interesting. Yeah. And then with Riedel, how did you come across that brand collaboration? And how long, because you still work with Riedel, I guess.
Yeah, right? I've been working with Riedel for 7 years now. Okay. So we've done 14 different products together.
Okay.
They're sold nationally in all the Riedel stores and at department stores in Japan. That's done well for me and for them, because it added some Japanese-ness. This Riedel is an Austrian wine glass maker, and they're really, really good at what they do. The glasses that I designed for are all handmade in Austria. They're very expensive and very beautiful, tall, like the Bordeaux glasses are this big. They're enormous. And they wanted to do something to sort of show their respect for Japan and Japanese craftsmanship. They asked me to design this series. That one's called the Bushido series. It's a decanter with my family crest on it.
Nice.
And so we have, I went to the company in Kanazawa called Hakuichi that makes the gold leaf. And so we did a sort of three-way collaboration. I did all the design and oversight, and then Hakuichi actually applies the gold leaf up there because they need to be washable and everything. So they seal them and put them in a kiln, and it's quite a process.
Yeah, I'm just going to ask you, because it's very delicate, right? Wine glasses are so delicate.
And
I've broken a few or more. So, you know, so when you have something with a piece of art on it, you take extra care, extra caution with it, right? So then how long does it take for the process for from, you know, applying the artwork onto the glass to it, then actually becoming ready
We make the next lots are, we make them in lots of 100.
Okay.
They're all handmade by craftspeople in Kanazawa. So you go in and they have a table of, I think, 20 craftspeople there. And I go and spend time with them and work with them. But they're applying the gold leaf.
Okay.
And then it goes into a, they coat, and then it goes into a kiln. So it's a process,
yeah.
It's probably a month to get through drying it of each stage.
Mm.
Yeah.
That in itself is a story, like, you know, how it gets from the artistic kind of impression to the final product.
Yeah, I think there's a tendency for people to, especially in today's day and age, to think that when they see a product like that on a shelf that it was made by a machine and it took 20 seconds or something. These are all very carefully handmade.
Yes.
The glass, the gold, the coating, everything.
Yeah.
A lot of care goes into these things. Yeah.
So do you know if Riedel kind of shares that story when somebody buys the product? That
they do,
Okay. So
and I do events at Riedel shops.
Okay.
You know, several times a year. We go down, we have a wine tasting, and I'll do a little speech or, you know, maybe bring some gold leaf and show people how it's done. And it's really fun. And people really like having something that's handmade that someone's taking care with.
Exactly, right? Because I can see, you know, at a dinner table with guests, you know, when your guests are admiring your glassware, you can talk about that.
Yeah.
Create a story, create a moment. That's what storytelling is all about. You create that memorable moment that they leave thinking, oh, that was a nice dinner, but those glasses, I want one of them, right?
I can't believe someone spent that much time making one thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how important is advertising and marketing for the Hewitt brand, for your brand story? And to get you out there.
Yeah, we were just talking about this before coming on. So important.
Yeah.
So important. And for an artist, I think we were talking about the book, The Tipping Point. I don't know if anyone's read that, but great book. When brands or something you know in the world becomes known by a broader audience or everybody. My technique for marketing the Hewitt brand is just sort of constant soft exposure.
Mm.
I don't make ads and say, please buy a painting. I just want people to know that I'm out there. I do shows. One of the biggest, or the two biggest things I've done in the past few years are actually working with Robert. Mm-hmm. This is how we got to know each other, at his company, Custom Media. I wanted a website, a great website. One that would be fun to go to, because I've looked at lots of artists' websites and they tend to be a lot of pictures of paintings and titles and prices.
Yeah.
I wanted someone to have fun on the website, like really have fun so that you could see a video or you could read a story. And so Custom Media helped me with that project, and it's great. Please go look at it. And then last year, I asked Custom Media, I wanted to you know, I said I'm a little older, I'm 56 and not so technically proficient, but I wanted to put up some YouTube videos so people could see me making art and see some of the projects I've done. Mm-hmm. And I asked Robert's team at Custom Media to help me do that, and they were amazing. They came up to the studio and spent days with me just watching me paint. And I was like, aren't you guys getting bored yet? And but they watched, and they really wanted to learn what I'm doing and get inside, the same way I would with a company that I'm collaborating with.
Yeah.
So it was great. And we made a video. I think it's, 4 minutes, 5 minutes long?
Mm-hmm.
It's quite long for a video. But that's gotten a lot of attention, and it's super useful for me when I go meet. I was telling Robert I had to have a meeting with one of the largest construction companies in Japan recently, because I'm doing some art for a project they have. And it was new to meet them, and they were very senior people. And I said, you know, I can talk for 20 minutes, or I can just show you this video. And so I pulled out my laptop and showed it, and it was great. And it covers 30 years. It tells the brand story. It does everything in a very concise. And we put jimaku, how do you say in English?
Yeah, subtitles.
Yeah. I forget my English. Subtitles on the bottom there, so it's good for audiences around the world. So it's been great. But that's the way I do it. It's just a sort of soft touch.
Soft touch, yeah.
And just hope that people, you know, will go, oh, the gold artist, you know, the gold leaf guy, you know.
Yeah, no, my team really enjoyed working with you, and they did enjoy being out of the office and spending those 2-3 days in Curaçao. So they said, we'll take more time if needed, but we need to go to David's studio and actually see him in process, in doing the work. And I think, just seeing you kind of drop the paint, onto the canvas and then just kind of working through. You were also doing some pottery, I think, so we got to see the pottery work as well that you do. So it's not just about gold leaf. So I guess you have multiple kind of pieces of art that you work with. So it just keeps your creative juices flowing.
All sorts of stuff going on, all the time.
David, is there anything I missed or anything you would like to share?
Robert was mentioning Curaçao. That's where my studio is. It's up in the mountains. It's an hour train ride out of Tokyo Station. Beautiful mountain, small town. Please come visit Curaçao if you'd like, anyone, anytime.
Excellent. Well, David, thank you very much. It's a fascinating journey that you've been on. And I think you really play a very, artistic role in sharing Japanese culture, which I do love as well, with the world, not just with Japan. And it's great to see you collaborating, not just with global brands, but your collaboration actually started with Japanese brands.
Yeah.
And, without you even being ready to collaborate with the brands, that's really interesting. And I think, your power of storytelling through your artwork really resonates with, what brands should be doing this day and age, because, brands can get misled with, commercial, aspects of their business, which is what they're trying to do. And these days, there's just so much out there, and with, especially in this day and age with digital, you can lose the consumer's attention, because attention spans are shrinking.
Yeah.
Right. So you need something that really not just captures them, but just mesmerizes them.
Yeah.
Right? And keeps their attention. So something like this, whiskey bottle with this art on it.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder, what is that?
Yeah.
Where's this behind? Right.
Yeah. It needs to be a story that engages people. And there are many ways to do that, but I think the shortcut is authenticity.
Yes. Yes. So that's, on that note, it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much.
And really appreciate your time, and wish you continued success. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. For more podcasts like this one, be sure to check out Advertising Week's ever-growing network of audio programming at www.advertisingweek.com/podcasts.